Hello and welcome to this episode of Bloodhound Picks, where I am one of your hosts, Craig.
I'm Kyle.
And this is Josh.
And this episode we will be talking our double feature picked by Kyle, which the two films are Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker and Crawl Space. So, Kyle, let's get it started.
All right. First up, we're talking about Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker, aka Night Warning, aka, as Josh just said, perhaps Auntie Dearest.
So shocking, so terrifying, so powerful. Night Warning has been named Best Horror Film of the Year by the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror. Billy and Julie, young, innocent, in love. It was all a mistake. They didn't go looking for trouble. They were just too curious. Without knowing, they've uncovered a deadly secret. By accident, they've stumbled onto a grisly murder. Now, they know too much to live. A chilling tale of a young boy and girl, innocent victims, now targets of a frenzied obsession with murder. See the award-winning Night Warning.
This is a film I found out because I listened to the Pure Cinema podcast, and they were talking about this shit all the time, so I finally watched it. And basically, it's a. How to summarize this? This kid's parents die in a horrible accident, and so he's raised by his aunt, played by Susan Tyrell. And you later basically discover that she is his mother, spoiler alert, and she has a sort of reverse Oedipus complex or something like that, and wants to sleep with him, and this results in murders. It's totally fucking insane. We could go back to the kid's parents being murdered, which is clearly an influence on like Final Destination. Because they're driving behind like that lumber truck and just that dude's head gets destroyed by a log.
Well, and it has a lot of homophobia and stuff like that
That's
too.
It's the beginning of the movie is like fucking shocking as hell with that fucking car accident.
yeah, it's pretty in it's almost the most intense thing in the movie.
Well,
Yeah, I would agree. And surprising.
and it's so like over the top watching it. Obviously, I'll bring up logic where logic doesn't need to be brought up in some of these movies, but so their brakes are cut. I'm like they so at no point did they have to hit their brakes prior to being on this mountain, this
Right.
swerving mountain. And then it shows them swerving back and forth a ton. They never slow down. There's the log that smashes into it. The truck doesn't apparently notice, keeps
Well,
driving.
yeah.
Yeah. And then the car falls off a cliff. Then it explodes. It's like everything is adding insult to injury for that whole thing.
Well, and I didn't think about this until you brought this up, but like, I mean, maybe cars back then didn't, maybe that car didn't have an emergency brake, but you could pull your emergency brake, maybe. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing though, too, like the log basically going through the car, beheading the dad, that whole thing is intense enough that you're just like, okay, I guess it's over. And then it goes off a ravine and then it explodes and you're just like, holy shit. Okay. But back to what you're saying, Craig, that's like the homophobia thing is like the most unexpected, interesting part of the movie. It's throughout the whole thing, and Bo Svenson is the biggest... He's the worst cop maybe I've ever seen in a movie, perhaps. But super homophobic. But then you have... But then the... so Billy, played by Jimmy McNichol, is a star basketball player and has a close relationship with a basketball coach who turns out to be gay. But it's played, like, just super normal. Like, it's the most progressive gay character in a movie, like, ever. You're like, what?
And he's probably the, like, most sensible character, I think, in the whole movie. Like, he's just...
And it's a really good performance. Like, you can... He's the what?
I was just going to say, he's the only character that's not a fucking wacko.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the interesting
part. Because they're all fucking whacked out.
Well, that's like an interesting theme in that story, because Svenson, the detective, is like super homophobic. So is Susan Tyrell, like when the subject comes up. So is really everybody. Billy and his girlfriend are like whatever. But yeah, then like the gay character is like the most normal fucking person in a world where everyone is like, no, you can't be gay. That's sick.
There's even that the other detective, he comes in providing all this information of great detective work, and Bo Svenson, it's like, well, I hope that you've been doing this on your own time. Oh, incredible. Like, he's upset that he's doing his job.
Anyone that does any detecting, he's like, okay, well, that's nice that you fucked around and found some information, but I know this kid's gay. I'm gonna I'm gonna put him in prison, basically.
Yeah.
Like, what? What's wrong with you?
Well, and it's like, you know, we haven't really talked about it, but the whole reason that the police are involved with the main character is because Susan Tyrell actually commits a murder, and then this douchey homophobic detective guy, he essentially thinks that, because you find out that the guy that Susan Tyrell kills is the coach's boyfriend, and so then the douchey detective guy determines on his own that Billy was the one that killed him because they had a lover's quarrel. And because he's gay, or he thinks he's gay, because the kid's not gay, but because he thinks he's gay, he's definitely the one that needs to be fucking put in prison for the rest of his life. And he fucking clearly killed this dude because he's gay. So fucking funny.
And what's interesting is, like, Susan Tyrell and Billy are telling the truth, basically. They're like...
Yeah.
They're lying that the guy was the aggressor when he wasn't, but she did fucking stab him and murder him.
Yeah.
And Bo Svenson is like, no, I have this way more random, unbelievable theory.
Because you guys are clearly both lying to me.
Yeah. So what happens is that she is kind of aggressive and flirtation and towards the Phil, isn't it? The
Phil
TV repair.
Brody. Yeah. Yeah, I would say she's
Yeah,
I wouldn't term it a flirtation when she rips her shirt open.
Yeah, I was gonna say she wants fucking nailed.
Yeah, and so she does that, and she kills him because he, you know, denies her, saying that he doesn't want her. Basically, is, you know, the gist of all of it.
Yeah. Which brings us to Susan Tyrell, which is like the best reason to watch the movie. She is so fucking nuts, and it's so entertaining. She just goes like so off the wall.
Yeah, she cuts her own hair at one point. It's mumbling to herself a ton.
Yeah, that haircut is terrible too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
she's talking about how great the haircut is at one point. Like, all excited about it to Julia, I think.
Her friend, her next door friend, or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, and she starts sedate. Well, we never really see what it is. I guess it's like some sort of sedative. You know, she starts drugging Billy with in his milk, So yeah. He passes out at the big basketball game, and then she just keeps drugging him, and then she knocks out his girlfriend. And then there's blood on the fridge that no one notices, and she's just, like, subtly wiping it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then she goes crazy with a machete, basically.
And it's fucking hilarious. It's so hilarious, too, that her like method for the poison is by giving the kid milk, and it's like never in anything but milk. It has to be fucking poisoned milk.
Yeah,
it's a good tie-in to the whole weird mother-child complex she's got going. Cause he loves milk and cookies or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And so the only thing is I don't know. There's kind of, what's the significance, maybe I didn't, that she's pretending to be his aunt even though she is his real mother?
So I
is
think,
there any sort of...
Well, I don't know. Yeah. We'll get to significance. I mean, I think obviously the literal reason was like she had this kid out of wedlock and that guy obviously... Well, she killed that guy who was going to leave her. But I think it was going to be one of those situations where her sister was going to raise the kid and they were going to lie to the kid about who...
Okay.
Maybe her sister and husband knew my sister's a little crazy.
Okay.
And we're going to raise the kid. But yeah, I don't know what the, like... I guess she's so repressed that once everything had been spelled out to the kid, she was never going to tell him that she was his mother or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just guessing.
Okay. Because there's so many where it's, you know, the mother... I mean, you can even see it in something like Dead Alive or whatever, where the mother is, it just says the father wasn't, or died, or the father, whatever, makes something else up. And, but yeah, it was just one of those kind of off things about, or even that the mother isn't the real mother. So it's kind of interesting having the mother be the real mother, but she's pretending to be somebody else. And still be a motherly figure to him.
Well, and still be like attracted to him. So I don't know if there's some element of having that false like remove where it's like, well, I'm just his aunt, so it's okay if I'm sexually attracted to him. I don't know. We should also mention then the one other thing is so that so Billy's actual father that she murdered, she has. Pictures and all this stuff from their relationship, and then you find out in the kind of like fruit cellar or whatever that is, she has like his head, and there's like a shrine, and it's kind of amazing. And she goes and talks to him about Billy.
Yeah.
We also haven't mentioned young Bill Paxton in his first role.
Oh, fuck yeah, I forgot about Bill Paxton. That was amazing.
He was up for the lead, and he just wasn't famous enough.
Yeah, I read that he was actually supposed to be Billy, which it's interesting because, you know, that kid does the kid, the actor is Jimmy McNichol. And I mean, he does a good enough job, I suppose. But, you know, we obviously all know that Bill Paxton turned into, you know, one of the greatest actors of all time.
Yeah, he could have done it. But he's so great as an asshole, though, too. And Jimmy McNichol is so, like, he's good, but there's some weird, I don't know, there's something about him that works for this part where I couldn't see Bill Paxton being as, like, kind of, not really pathetic. I don't know why I want to call him, I don't know what it is about him.
Like submit, I don't know. He's more submissive or sensitive, I think, than.
Yeah.
Fine. Yeah, that's true.
All right. Well, I guess that's it, right?
Yeah. So let's move on to Crawl Space with Klaus Kinski.
Someone is watching. Someone is waiting. Waiting until you're alone. Waiting until you're trapped. Waiting until you're terrified. You can try to run. You can try to hide. But there is really only one way out. Crawl space.
Yes.
The very the not egomaniac, very easy to work with, Klaus Kinski.
Yeah, by all accounts, just a great guy.
Yeah.
So this was actually the theme of this pairing was going to be like over the top performances. Because of Susan Tyrell and Klaus Kinski. And then I rewatched Crawl Space and I'm like, you know, Klaus Kinski is pretty like restrained in this movie, actually.
Yeah. A lot more than other ones that, you know.
It's just the idea, I guess, is like so fucking crazy. So basically, Klaus Kinski runs some kind owns some apartment building and he will only rent it to beautiful women. Like one guy comes who is actually the director. And gets turned away just because he's a dude. And Kinski has turned this place into his like H.H. Holmes like murder apartment place. So he's got he can go through all the vents and watch people and kill them. And he's also got a he's got like the attic is his lair. And we discover that he has a person whose tongue has been cut out who just lives in a cage up there who's like his only friend.
And this is
go ahead.
This is pre People Under the Stairs too.
Yeah, and it has say,
a lot of elements from that.
There's a lot of like elements of that. Well, and we also find out that Kinski's father was like a Nazi doctor. And he is into that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I guess I mean that's like there's no real plot. I mean like someone moves in and people just start getting killed.
I like horror. I don't know. There's like this whole series of horror movies, 70s, 80s. Well, maybe it stopped after that point. It's like if you have a German actor, they have to somehow be linked to like a Nazi. Like there's that whole, you know.
It's pretty stereotypical. But it's weirdly.
It works. Yeah.
Yeah, weirdly for this movie, though, I think. So Klaus Kinski was terrible to work with specifically on this movie. The director, David Schmaler, who also did fucking Netherworld and Tourist Trap, he made a short film about how terrible it was working with Klaus Kinski and how like everyone wanted to fucking kill him. But I think he's the most like interesting part of the movie, though. Like,
That was the name of the short, wasn't it?
I can't remember what it's called.
Like, I want
it's Klaus something about literally killing Klaus Kinski.
Yeah.
Because somebody was like gonna pay somebody else to literally assassinate the motherfucker.
Yeah, everybody in the crew or something said they wanted him dead by the end of it.
Yeah, and one of the someone working in the for the production literally suggested it.
Yeah. Well, I mean that even if you look at My Best Fiend, Werner Herzog talks about that the indigenous people in which one was it? I can't remember which one they were that they were talking about, but that they asked Werner Herzog if he wanted them to kill Klaus Kinski as well. Like, I don't know.
It makes sense. Yeah, he seems like a total piece of shit in real life, but
yeah.
He's interesting to watch.
Yeah.
As you can say.
I don't know. One of the scenes that got me is there's just like that musical number, too, where one of the tenants is playing a piano song and just singing.
It's like, awful.
Yeah. And it's really bad.
It's kind of worth it for that payoff later when
it's
like rigged it up to replay and she finds that girl dead.
Yeah.
And also to add insult to injury with that scene in particular with the musician woman, she's got that fucking giant Barbara Streisand portrait hanging on the wall.
Yeah. Well, and she's also got...
You know, that just makes it even worse.
She's also got her boyfriend who sneaks in so they can enact her rape fantasies that then Klaus Kinski can watch.
Yep.
That's all aged pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, there's there's his prisoner who he keeps up there to talk to, who's removed her tongue. And but what I also like is that element. It's a fun little part of it where he keeps doing Russian roulette on himself.
Yes.
And basically, as long as he's not, you know, killed himself, then it gives him, I guess, the god complex or whatever it may be to keep going.
Yeah, I was going to say that's basically like every morning in my life. Well, I just I'm alive. And then that person in the cage is just my dog.
Yeah.
So in terms of the sort of thematic bit for this show with Susan Tyrell and Klaus Kinski, I kind of agree with what you said, Kyle, that he is sort of like, he's not nearly as fucking whacked out as Susan Tyrell, let's put it that way. But I did find it completely fucking hilarious too, and fucking nuts, when he is up in his lair and he puts the Nazi propaganda video on and starts putting the makeup on his face and like smearing the lipstick all over his that. And it was like, I don't remember exactly what he was doing, but I feel like he was like screaming and shit. Like, okay. Yeah. He's definitely fucking nuts.
He's equally crazy. I think that's like one of the best images of the film too, of like him.
Oh, I thought it was the best part.
Yeah, with that footage projected on him of like bombs dropping and stuff. That's right, the part like as cheesy as the movie is, that's probably like the one part where you're like, well, I do buy Klaus Kinski as like as this character. Jesus.
Yeah. Well, and like talking about just even talking about how cheesy it is, like at the end. You know, like, so there's basically a main female character, right?
Yeah.
Who he's obsessed over with and, you know, obviously he's going to try to kill. Anyway, so this woman, you know, finds his lair and finds his little friend that he keeps in the cage and blah, blah, blah. And then she ends up being chased by Kinski through the fucking air duct. And so, you know, it's an air duct, so you got to crawl on your hands and knees or, you know, elbows and knees or whatever. Yeah. And as he's fucking chasing her and he gets on that fucking skateboard thing, I was like, I fucking lost it, dude, because I was like, why the fuck would you have that in there? Like, oh my God, that was so fucking funny.
The, as I like to call it, the crawl space crawl chase is like the
best
fucking thing ever.
It was so goddamn funny.
It doesn't make any fucking sense. And it,
no.
It leads into the like fake out climax where you think that Klaus Kinski has been impaled by his own like torture device. And so that lead woman and the prisoner like go to call the cops, and then you see that like thing he's made before where it's like a vest with like a blade coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes it all off, and you're like, how the fuck would you know that this was leading to a situation where they could, like, witness your fake death? I mean, this is post-crawl chase, though, so, I mean, logic has long left the movie.
Yeah. Oh, fuck, yeah, it's just like, you know, of course, that's like, at the end of the movie, and there's not really been anything, like, of any sort of hilarity or humor in it, and then he fucking gets on, there's just that random, like, skateboard that he can lay on and just go fucking zooming through the goddamn air to, I fucking lost it, man. Yeah. I was just like,
and well,
you gotta be kidding.
They never showed it before either, like,
yeah.
But I do love that someone thought, like, Well, he's going through these ducts, and I'm sure at some point he thought, like, I gotta go faster.
What? Well, and it would, you know, make it a smoother, so maybe they wouldn't hear it as much. I don't know.
How much do you want to bet that was, like, the camera dolly for those vents? Because I feel like it's gotta be.
Probably, yeah.
They're like, Klaus, just get on. Or Klaus was just like, let me get on the dolly.
Yeah. By that point, they're just like, yeah, just do it, whatever
do
you
whatever
want.
You want. We already got that shot of the gun, and we know we're going to end with you being dead.
Yeah.
So originally, though, this was supposed to be a Vietnam vet.
Okay.
Like, apparently it was more of a passion project, and he wanted it to be all about, like, Vietnam, and then, you know, it became what it became.
Yeah. Because, so yeah, so once they hired Klaus Kinski, I'm assuming that's when it switched over.
Yeah, I think it might have even been before that. I feel like he said like some producer wanted it to be Nazis, or I don't know. They didn't. They obviously didn't really want to do anything topical.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think the score by Pino Donaggio, like the weird like. When there's those bits of, like, it's, like, kids, like, singing or whatever, is pretty creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess that's it for Crawl Space. There's not a whole lot to say about Crawl Space.
No. But it is available currently on Tubi, and Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker is available on Shudder, and I think Amazon Prime? No,
it was on YouTube, though.
Okay. Yes. So you can find both of those on there if you want to watch it. And do we have anything else we want to talk about on either of these movies or in general?
Speak now or forever hold your peace.
Josh?
Why is it always got to be me?
I don't know.
I mean, yeah, I think with like Crawl Space is obviously, you know, a much quicker discussion movie because there's really not anything to it necessarily, in terms of the plot anyway. So.
Okay.
And you know, we mentioned the reverse Oedipal complex from.
Yeah. We covered our bases.
Yeah, so
we hit all the high marks.
So do we want to start do we want to rank, I guess not rank, but say which we was our favorite out of the two? Do we want to change it up, add anything for these double features?
We can. Do we want to do
I don't know if we want to add anything more, but
we can. I think Butcher Baker is probably my favorite, I guess. Just because of Susan Tyrell.
I'd agree. Yeah, I'd say
Butcher
Baker.
Yeah, it's a much better movie.
Yeah.
So that's the consensus. And, yeah, of course, if you're listening to this, thank you so much. Feel free to rate, comment. If you've seen the movies and feel differently or the same, send us a message. If you have any movies that you that are entirely independent or obscure that you think we should watch, send it our way. And next time when we do this segment, it will be Josh's double pick. And also, we are starting to look at doing some audio commentaries for a couple movies. And we'll have more information on that soon. So you'll be able to listen to your movie or listen to us while watching your favorite movies.
And if anyone knows where we can find a skateboard to go through our crawl space, let us know.
Yeah. Thank you again and have a good night.
Bloodhound Pigs Podcast is part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcast Network. Produced by Josh Lee, Craig Drum, and Kyle Hintz. Music by Raymond Seed. Editing by Kyle Hintz.